Hi, so today I am so excited for this Seed in Society podcast. We have Alan Lazarus on today. He is a founder and CEO of Next Level University, which is a global top 100 self-improvement podcast that helps people reach their own unique potential and in more than 175 countries, 180 now. So as a coach, trainer, and podcaster, he believes in a heart-driven approach to achieving both external success and internal fulfillment.
Curious about owning land, growing your own food, or building income that doesn't depend on you showing up every day? That's what I'm doing, and this is where I share exactly how. Welcome to Seed in Society. I'm Makeda Boehm, an AI strategist, homesteader, and tech sales leader turning paychecks into lasting multi-million dollar wealth. I use automation, food-producing land, and digital income streams to build real assets and long-term freedom for my family and help others do the same. If you're done trading time for survival and want to build on your own terms, you're in the right place.
Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for that awesome intro. And I always want to start with gratitude because 10 years ago when I started a little company called Alan Lazarus LLC, it was what you'll never learn in school but desperately need to know. And I wanted to bring personal development to the school systems and to the masses. And it was crickets. So I'm very grateful to be here. I'm grateful for the opportunity, seriously, because I remember when no one cared. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that is a really great point. As I said, like, there's a lot of founders listening, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of intentional people. And I think that they can definitely understand that sentiment that when you have the dream and you see the vision, a lot of times it's crickets until everyone else starts to listen. And then, you know, not everyone can be a pioneer. So I definitely understand that. So what I want to get into today is you just explained that you started this company, you know, years ago, and what it is that your company does now. How'd you get here?
Okay, so first and foremost, your point you already made, you have to believe in something long before anyone else does, and not just believe in it, but invest in it. And I have people that have reached out and said, hey, I'm really sorry, and I believe in you now. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't need you to believe in me now. I needed it back then. So for the early entrepreneurs out there who believe in something and you're watering that plant every day, even though it's only beneath the soil and no one can see it, I fight for you. I'm rooting for you because later on is much easier. It's harder in some ways because it's more responsibility, but it's more people believe in you later on. Just you gotta have faith in that. So my story started out tough. The three main parts of my story, I'll try to be brief here. I know we only have a half hour. I was born into a tough situation. So when I was 2.5, almost three, this was 1991. I was born in 1988. Born and raised in Massachusetts. My birth father passed away suddenly in a car accident when he was 28 years old. I had a mom who was 31. I had a sister who was 5.5, almost 6. And that was very sudden and very tragic for sure. And then I had a stepfather from age 3 to 14. So from 1992 to basically the early 2000s, dot-com bubble, my stepdad, Steve Lazarus, I took his last name around age 7. So my birth father's last name is McCorkle. So it was John McCorkle. It was Jim, Joe, John, Jane, Joan, Jeanette. As a matter of fact, my grandparents on my dad's side, I also call Mom, Mom, and Papa, which I noticed you had mentioned Papa earlier when we were off air. So I thought that was fascinating. But anyways, so big Irish Catholic family, born and raised in Massachusetts. And when we were trying to be the Lazaruses, quote unquote, we didn't really associate much with the McCorkles anymore. And I took his last name, I want to say around age 6 or 7. And he worked for a company called AGFA, A-G-F-A. They did hospital computers during the dot-com era. And the 90s in the U.S., but globally, were wild. Wild economic boom times. Lots of expansion, 30% year-over-year growth in the economy, all kinds of stuff. So it was big expansion times. And so I playfully refer to that part of my life from 3 to 14 as boats and BS. My mom and stepdad loved to have fun. And that was their paradigm, have as much fun as possible. And so we had snowmobiles, we had motorcycles, we had ski trips and boats, and we grew up on a lake. And we had friends who wanted to have a lot of fun. And again, in the US, it's the largest economy on planet Earth by a significant margin. And you can look that up. It's still the case. But the reason I'm saying that is there was a lot of abundance. Yeah, by a lot. There's a lot of abundance. In the 90s in particular, there's a lot of abundance. And
I mean, so California is the third largest economy in the world by itself.
I know. Yeah. Isn't it wild? Yeah, not a lot of people know that. Yeah. So, but my point of that is when my stepdad left at 14, he took 95% of the income with him. Because he did hospital computers for that company, AGFA, during the dot-com era. So we did very well. And then when he left, it was boats and ski trips and early Christmas presents to, I get free lunch at school now because our income is so low. I shop at Salvation Army. My mom trades in her BMW for a little Honda Civic. So, and it was kind of, I hope I get into college. It went from, I hope I get in. My college was WPI, Worcester Polytechnic Institute. It's like a mini MIT in Massachusetts, tech school,
very
engineering
familiar
school.
With it. Oh, I sold to higher education software. That was what I've done for a lot in my territory was New York up, and I'm from Philly, so.
Okay, so you know WPI yeah. Well. Excellent. It's a tech school, and it was $50,000 a year back then. So I went from, I hope I get in, to even if I do get in, I can't go. So I was 14 at the time. To this day, I'm 36 now. I always say I'm hoping to hit puberty at 37. I look very young for those of you who are on video. But ultimately, when I was 14, I looked into the future. I said, okay, no dad, no generational wealth, no trust fund. Like, we're in some trouble here. He got the yacht and the apartment building. We got the house and the dog. And the income was kind of gone because my mom was a stay-at-home mom most of her life. And it was, what are we going to do? And so I kind of unconsciously, I guess, took a lot of responsibility for the family. So I'm 36 now. My stepdad left at 14. To this day, I've never seen or spoken to a single one of them. The entire extended family. Same year, 14 years old, mom gets in a fight with my Aunt Sandy. Her sister. We get ostracized from her side of the family. So by the time I'm 14 years old, I kind of lost three full families. We reconnected with, to this day, I've only seen two human beings from my mom's entire extended family. And we reconnected with the McCorkles a bit, but it was kind of the ghost of Christmas past. I look a lot like my dad type of thing. So it was never really the same. So I didn't know this at the time. I did a lot of therapy in my 30s. I've rewatched the movie of my life over and over and over and over again. I've always been kind of existential, contemplating everything and everyone. It's exhausting. But anyways.
Oh, I know.
I know you do. I can tell. That's why you knew about the California thing. But anyways, so what I've come to understand now in hindsight, there's four trauma responses. There's fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. Fawn is the one I didn't know about. Fawn means you appease. So there's two worlds we all have to live in. We have to live in the real world and the social world. The social world is your reputation, and the real world is your character. The social world is your Instagram. The real world is your real life. I always say the social world is the wedding photos. The real world is the actual marriage. So,
I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's super important. We all have to live in both, but the syntax matters. And so essentially what happened is I lose three families by the time I'm 14, and then I become this sort of social coward. So in the social world, I appease, fawn. I used to call myself a chameleon. I could fit in anywhere. What I realize now in hindsight is that I was trying to be liked. I was trying not to be abandoned. I was trying to be, don't lose any more friends and family. Please don't lose any more friends and family. But in the real world, behind the scenes, it was fight. It was aim higher, work harder, get smarter. Aim higher, work harder, get smarter. Aim higher, work harder, get smarter. I became this super achiever, prove myself guy. Straight A's through all of high school. I got 189 in honors English. How dare you, Miss Desolates? Luckily, it was weighted because I got behind me. It's signed by George W. Bush. It's called the Academic Excellence President's Award. And I got into WPI. I got No Child Left Behind. I got financial aid and scholarships. I was the obnoxious kid at the award ceremony that just kept going up. You know, might as well not sit down.
Yeah.
And I went to WPI. I got my computer engineering degree, graduated with high distinction, and got my master's in business. And then I was broke in high school and college. So then after that, it was wild. The economy was coming back after 08. It was 2012 bachelor's, 2013 master's. And I just worked for tech companies. And it was iRobot, Sensata Technologies, Oz Development, Tyco Safety Products, Simplex, Grinnell. I eventually landed a company called Cognex. Cognex sells industrial automation equipment into manufacturing facilities all across the world. And my territory, you obviously know territories, was Vermont, Connecticut, and Western Massachusetts. And so I went from 65 at that first job, 65 a year, to 85 a year. From 85 to 105, from 105 to 125, 125 to 180. So I peaked in corporate. This is in, when I was 26. I peaked in corporate at almost 200 grand a year, 1% global earner. I achieved most of my dreams that I thought would matter. And I was going to take care of my family and all that. I paid off 84 grand worth of college debt in a single year. I had 150 grand in a Vanguard account because I was so used to being broke. I didn't need money. I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have kids. My rent was 500 bucks. I split it with my girlfriend, Courtney, at the time. And I drove a 2004 Volkswagen Passat that I bought in 5 grand cash. I learned to need very little, which actually ended up being a superpower later on. Mm-hmm. So I just invested all my money in tech companies, which I knew would win because tech wins typically if you're smart about it. Then I get in my car accident. Mm-hmm. So I'm 26. I'm up in New Hampshire. The yield sign is covered by a snowbank. I'm supposed to yield. I don't. I end up on the wrong side of the road and then head-on collision with a lift-kitted pickup truck. Not a fender bender. This was 30 miles an hour head-on. Fortunately, no one was killed. If anyone was killed, it would have been my fault. Both airbags deployed. It was a lift-kitted pickup truck, so they were okay. Definitely rattled. But this was the second chance my dad never got. Because I'm 26 at the time. My dad died in a car at 28. And at this point, this is my quarter-life existential crisis. I mean, this is when I just questioned everything. Filled with regret. Who am I? What did I become? Am I proud? If that was it, would I have been proud of everything? And that was 10 years ago. And that's when I found self-improvement, personal growth, and personal development. And that's when I realized that I had put the social world ahead of the real world. And I was externally successful, but internally unfulfilled. And that's when I started going inward. And I flipped the script. I went all in on fitness model, fitness competitor, fitness coaching, 3 fitness competitions, you know, 43 photo shoots. I was happy, healthy, productive, and fulfilled. But I went broke. You can't sustain it because the social world is the economy. And so now I think what everyone wants, I have these 4 buckets of life. I'll get off the soapbox. The first one is you're unfulfilled and unsuccessful. That's where we all start. I was a cart kid and a bus boy at 14, worst years of my life, 15, 16, and just wildly unsuccessful and wildly unfulfilled. I think that's where we all start. Second bucket is you go find a way to be successful. But then you realize you're not fulfilled because that success is not aligned with who you really are, or the other way around. So second bucket is externally successful, internally unfulfilled. Then you flip the script and you're like, all right, I'm going to go all in on personal development, baby. It's going to be what I'm aligned with, my passion and my purpose. And then you go broke and realize the economy doesn't care. And then the fourth bucket is where I think everyone wants to get, and very few people are. I coach 24 people, 24 business owners. It is very hard to get to this fourth bucket. It took me till my 30s to do it. And I was trying, trust me. The fourth bucket is being externally successful and internally fulfilled. And then that's a mountain that gets higher as you climb it. And I finally got there in my 30s, and now I'm just trying to amplify it. And that's what I help people with now. And so that's actually why I'm here. And hopefully I can help your listeners do the same.
That is incredible. And you are absolutely in the right place. I talk about that. I'm guessing you were an account executive.
Yes.
I am an enterprise account executive now. I've been one for years. So I talk about that often. I last year made about $500,000 in commission. And it is
nice work.
One of those things that I talk about often because, like you said, you build up to something and you're externally successful and you have the job and you're traveling. And that's all great, but I lost my mom last year. And that clarified a lot of stuff for me. I feel like I was already pretty clear and in alignment, kind of how you say I took existentialism and wrote the paper, and I used to say I'm in an existential crisis in my 20s. So I won't go into us being in a simulation, but it sounds very in line with that. So I understand. And I think that that is super important for the audience to hear and know that there is a balance between alignment, passion, fulfillment, and like living, being able to actually support yourself. That's why I'm so passionate about asset-based wealth. Like I'm here and we're on 10 acres mortgage-free. And I talk about that because it helps to have that baseline, because I got my GED and at 16 was on my own and, you know, have my MBA as well. So
good for you.
Is definitely a journey.
You are an anomaly. Good for you. A statistical anomaly. Yeah.
Yeah, I have my master's in data science certificate. I was finishing the master's and then I was like, I'm not going to do this. Got my MBA, but I do like statistics. I do like running the regression analysis. And I had less than 2% chance of graduating from college. And it was an R1 college. I went to Temple University and I still graduated top 10%.
Nice job.
Still don't know how I did it, but I do know it was definitely a trauma response.
Yeah, course. Yeah, trauma responses, they make you into something very unique, and then hopefully you find yourself within them. Yeah.
Exactly. And hopefully you get from trauma and survival to thriving.
Agreed.
And understanding that those tools that got you there were great for that time, but you have to evolve and adapt.
Well said.
What I found super interesting is that you said you coach folks and business owners in how to get to that level of alignment. Can you talk a bit about what that looks like?
Absolutely. First of all, congrats. That's huge. And I like how unabashedly you share that, because statistically, it's important for people to see that it's possible. And absolutely. I just think that's awesome. Also, I know on Riverside, it says Seed Society. What's your first name? Just so I know.
Oh. I am so sorry. I'm Makeda.
Okay, Makeda. Yeah. I should have known from the emails. No stress.
It's a lot happening.
It's all good.
I see my email. I have like 10 meetings coming up and I'm like, okay, I get it. And we spoke a bit about this. This is like your 10th meeting today and it is Saturday. So this guy does not take breaks, okay?
So it is, I think it's my 9th or 10th. And I think there's a lesson in that too. Because when my stepdad left, we're in some trouble. And I will say this, everything that you shared, you know, 10 acres mortgage free, 500,000 a year, congratulations, $500,000, awesome. But like work ethic is the way. Work ethic is the way. You're not gonna get successful without work ethic. I tell my clients, if you have work ethic and you are consistent, give me enough time and I got you. If you don't have work ethic, there's nothing I can do for you. So you know, go somewhere else.
That's just facts.
Yeah, that's facts. Thank you. Oh my goodness. This is great. This is awesome already. Okay. I forgot what question you asked, but I do want to correct something. I was an outside sales engineer and yes, I managed accounts. I don't know if my term was account executive, but.
No, you're a sales engineer. I love my SCs. I love my SEs. Okay.
Nice. Okay,
the whole team gets it done.
So you sell software into universities and colleges and companies?
Now I sell to state government. So now I sell to government. Previously, last year, it was higher education HR software.
Very, very cool. Okay. So what was your question again? Oh, passion, purpose, profit. Got it. Okay. Sorry.
And also just like what you teach
framework
to your coaching clients.
Okay. So two separate things that I teach a lot, but these are the two main ones. All right. First one is passion into purpose into profit in that order. So a passion is an obsession. A lot of people don't like the word obsession. A passion is something that you love it even when it sucks.
I like the word obsession personally.
Nice. Okay. Of course you do. Yeah. Hey, same. Yeah. All right. So I have my three obsessions and I have my one word, and I'll use me, but I want the listeners thinking of them. My one word is potential. I want to reach my own unique potential and help others do the same. That's my one word, potential. Okay. Triangle around it. Three obsessions. Fitness, If you go to my Instagram, it's all fitness. My business partner's like, you're a business coach, man. What are we doing? I love fitness. Okay. So it's fitness, personal development, and business. So I help people, and I can give you my passion and my purpose and my profit all in one sentence. I, Alan Lazarus, am here to reach my own unique potential and help others do the same in fitness, personal development, and business through the vehicles of coaching, training, and podcasting. So when you said I'm on my 10th or 9th of the day, I'd have to look at it. It's coaching, training, and podcasting. Those are the three vehicles that I deploy what I do. Now, that said, I didn't start out with that clarity. It wasn't like 10 years ago. I was like, I, Alan Lazarus, blah, 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 blah. No, you find that out over time. So passion is what do you love doing even when it sucks? And you don't know you love something because you always want to do it. You know you love something because you're always glad you did. I'll be honest with you. It's been a long day. I wanted to be here, but there's a part of me that didn't want to be here and wanted to reschedule because it's been a long day. But I'll be glad that I came. I'll be glad I did it. Okay, so that's passion. Purpose is serving others. So I'll use fitness as an example. So fitness is a passion. Fitness coaching is a purpose. And then if it's profitable, it's for profit. So let's say fitness, back when I was a fitness coach, fitness was my passion. Helping other people get in shape was my purpose. And then I did that for profit. And then you feed that back into your passion. So it's passion, purpose, profit. Passion, purpose, profit. Passion, purpose, profit. The problem is, a lot of times what we're passionate about is not economically sound. So I always say, well, how much would Michael Jordan get paid to play basketball 300 years ago? $0. There was no market for it. There was no NBA. So a lot of our passions are not marketable. The economy, what's meaningful, passionate work for us is not always what the economy pays for.
And that's interesting. It's interesting because I have battled with this. This is literally why I made the connector method, which is about action, creating evidence, which then gives you confidence for outcomes to change your life. And it's really a circle, but everything starts with action, like you said, working. But I've literally also made this because I think that in the age that we're in, everything can be monetized, especially when you're talking about the creator economy. Now we're in a world where by 2027, Goldman Sachs projects that it'll be worth $500 billion as an industry. And last year alone, it came out at around $300 billion.
Nice.
So it literally is about if you know how to market your passions these days and you know how to tell people why this is, you're the person to tell them about it, and you understand how to use this wonderful thing we have called the internet and AI, I feel like you're in a very, almost like how you talked about the dot-com boom.
Yeah.
We are in a revolutionary period right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where if you learn how to harness this technology and, you know, go grab my five systems on how to turn what you know into profit.
Nice.
I believe you can truly monetize anything these days, but I absolutely do not think it's easy.
Yes,
simple,
that.
But not
and
easy.
And it's easier to monetize certain things that the economy already pays a lot for.
Absolutely.
But if you know how to brand, market, sell, deliver, and build a community, you can monetize almost anything. Fair. And it's going to take tons of work ethic. And I do believe the internet has been a double-edged sword in the fact that, and again, I love Tim Ferriss and his work, but the four-hour work week, brother, you haven't worked a four-hour work week in your life. You've been working 60 hours a week for decades. So at the end of the day, there's a funny joke. The only person who got rich off the four-hour work week is Tim Ferriss. And I like Tim. I respect his work. I really do. But ultimately, my point is, if you think you're going to be successful with minimal effort, you're in serious trouble because there's 8 billion people on planet Earth. There's 195 countries and everybody is competing for attention and you have to have a brand that is actually trustworthy. And that means you got to show up consistently for your audience and for your people. And so I'm with you. I think it's more abundant now than ever. It's more possible now than ever and not without work.
Not without work.
Yeah. So passion, you know, to purpose and to profit.
It's crazy you said that because that's why I started Seed in Society. Literally because it's about designing income streams in life around life. To have that time freedom. I have a 5-year-old. I have a 2-year-old. I'm homeschooling now. I work from home. I live literally in a town with no stoplights. Nice. And I homestead. So that's like my big thing. It's like you work in tech and you homestead. But it's because I had to be very intentional about reclaiming my time.
Yeah.
What I've learned on this journey, though, I'm literally building in real time. You are on like episode 1,000 something with your podcast, beyond amazing. But I started 3 months ago. And what I've learned, and I've written about this in my newsletter, is that you can eventually get to some form of passive revenue. Mm-hmm. However, it's from front loading.
Yeah.
It is nothing is plug and play, and actually trying to always find the shortcut ends up meaning you do way more work anyway than if you actually put in the effort to then get dividends off of whatever it is that you're doing. So I completely agree. I don't believe in hustle culture, but I believe in what you said, which is having your passion and your purpose and the thing that you don't ever feel bad about doing, even though you have to put an effort to do it.
Yeah.
And even farther than that, you shouldn't want to not put in effort. While I am really passionate about the fact that I plan on retiring before the age of 40. Retiring for me doesn't mean I don't work. It means that I'm just able to work on whatever it is that I want to work on.
Nice.
And I like when you stop moving, and I say this in my previous episode, you stop living. That is like the laws of the jungle. You have to keep moving. And I love that you talked about that from a fitness perspective, because I don't know if you were on it or if you're familiar with Alex Hormozi, but I was watching his launch and I have like all the $100 million books. And I think that there is a huge correlation between folks who put in the work at the gym, which is not easy. Before I had my children, I used to be running 5Ks, 8 miles, like in the gym every morning. And it's a different mindset. I think you start to embrace kind of the pain of understanding what the outcome is. And it works very well if you then are an entrepreneur.
I see a huge correlation between fitness and what it takes to be successful in real life. And I think that
I agree. I feel very unsuccessful when I do not work out. And that has been the thing, because I won't go down the whole thing of when you have children and you're literally going through like puberty again, but in a less fun way, if it could be less fun, and it just changes you. But if I work out in a day and I do nothing else, I feel the most successful.
Well, one thing I would say is, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, this is what I used to say. Oprah's 71 years old. I've studied her career. She's done great things in the world. I respect her deeply. Oprah has trouble getting on a Stairmaster just as much as we do. No one wants to get on a Stairmaster. It's terrible. But you always are glad you did. And I think that that's a good metaphor for what it takes to be a business owner. There are calls today I did not want to get on. There are coaching sessions I did not want to do. There are podcasts I didn't want to do. And I think that when you listen to your feelings, you got to be careful, because a lot of times your feelings want to go eat a donut. But I'm always glad that I did. And that's when you know it's your work. That's when you know it's your passion. And at the end of the day, 8 billion people on planet Earth, 195 countries, whatever you choose for your thing, make sure it's something that you just freaking adore. Because otherwise you're competing with people who do adore it. And what's something that I can't stand? Okay, fixing cars. Don't care. Not interested. Don't even like cars. Not a fan. At the end of the day, if you love cars and I could care less, I'm never going to beat you at your thing. And so make sure your passion is a passion. And a lot of people say this. They say, well, I don't want my passion to feel like a job. It's better than having a job you hate.
I think so. I think that there is definitely a balance with that. I think that when you do stuff that genuinely feels good to you, and I'm a big believer in listening to your feelings, I think that it is something deep. and ancestral in a lot of ways, and it's the knowing beyond the logical mind. I think that is why I've been so successful. I have done things that people on paper.
You're referring to your intuition, though. You're referring to your intuition.
I think intuition, but also like even just like, I think sometimes your intuition informs your feelings, like in a moment, like when you know you're not safe in a place you know that this isn't the place that like you're supposed to be and you just feel it. And me, for example, I've also do a lot of therapy. And
same.
It's like my therapist challenged me to even say, like, where does it show up in my body? And a lot of times for me, it's my stomach. Mm-hmm. Like, you just feel that tightening. You can't. And sometimes you push through it, because I also feel that before I get on stages to do keynote speeches.
Exactly.
And it's that feeling, but you have to do stuff scared a lot of times.
So how do you know when to listen to the feeling and when not to?
I think that comes from action and evidence. When you're able to actually take stock of the things that you've done in your life and the things that you've made it through, then you're able to sit there and say, I have done this before, whether it's in a different way, like navigating my way around Amsterdam at 2 a.m. with $100 in my pocket, or by being on, I think for us as well, like being on my own since 16 and still figuring out how to beat the odds helps me to be maybe even overly confident in some ways, because I know I can research, I know I can learn, I know that I'm coachable, so I know I can figure this out. And also having Google, I think that helps a lot. And now we have ChatGPT and Claude, which is like Google on steroids.
Nice.
So I think that it comes from doing the thing and then giving yourself enough feedback and data to have the confidence in yourself to know what you can do next. And that comes down to if you're a parent and you've had to navigate children doing something. It comes down to if you've ever started a job, if you've ever moved to a new country, if you've ever learned a new language. So many things gives you evidence so that you can fight the fear or the feelings that are telling you not to, and trust in your vision, which is where it's that balance, to move forward.
The other side of that coin, though, and what I've found is a lot of people have a feeling of, well, I don't really feel like doing it, or I don't really feel like showing up, or I don't really feel like going to the gym, and they listen to that feeling. And so it's hard to help people understand which emotions to listen to and which ones not to, because a lot of times you don't feel like going to the gym, but you actually should, because your highest self is saying, yes, go. And your lower emotional self is saying, no, don't go. But the intuition thing is different, but that's something that I've found a lot coaching people is that they'll say, well, I don't really feel like it. And it's like, well, the science of achievement doesn't really care if you feel like it when it comes to not eating horribly or actually exercising and that kind of stuff. So I think it's a double-edged sword with that stuff.
I definitely think it's double-edged. I also think that there is other ways. Everyone's perception is going to be different for how the outcome should be. For some people, it is, hey, you should be as fit as absolutely possible, and that is a key indicator of success. But sometimes people are fat and happy. And that is their prerogative. It's their life, right? Like, no one else has to live in your shoes but you. And I think when it comes to authenticity, and when you actually don't rely on a lot of society for your very basic needs, like your food and your shelter, kind of like here, we grow our food, we have our shelter.
Nice.
In some ways, I think that you're able to then show up and say, hey, I'm taking this hike. I live like next to one of the tallest waterfalls on the East Coast.
Nice.
And I'm taking this hike because I genuinely love being in nature. And I also love the fact that it's making me move and I'm getting my macros in. But I also am understanding that I am a spiritual being having a human experience. Mm-hmm. And I can do everything right and still get struck by lightning tomorrow.
Yeah.
I feel like, what's the point of a lot of things if you don't enjoy your day to day? So many people optimize for the future and they don't realize that all we actually have is the present. So what are you doing today to enjoy your life? And you can try to optimize for the future, of course, like think forward, but also enjoy now, because that's all you have.
Well, I think that's the double-edged sword too. And I think you and I will have a healthy discord. I think it's both. So you have to learn from the past, build in the present toward a bigger, better, brighter future. But I think trajectory matters more than current position. And so I'm a math guy and everything's future oriented for me. So,
yeah.
And it, remember, it's reach your full potential. So when you say something like some people are fat and happy, I would say they would be more fulfilled if they were more fit. Well, at the end of the day, I think we all have three parts of our nature: four, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And you're referring to the spiritual part. And I think that spiritual is intuition. The emotional part is usually your belief systems, your mammalian brain, and then you've got the cognitive prefrontal cortex, and then you've got the physical central nervous system, peripheral nervous system. So ultimately, it all depends on your goals, your core values, and what you want for your life. You and I are both on the same page about freedom of choice. What I would say, however, is fulfillment is usually a byproduct of meaningful goals for a meaningful purpose that serves the world in a meaningful way. And that's what I've found. I think a lot of the people hear the power of now and stay present, but a lot of times they misinterpret that as now is all that matters, when in reality, in 10 years, you're going to arrive and you can't guarantee anything, but the average life expectancy for women is 80 in the US. And again, it's globally, it's different. I think it's 84 in Canada and it's 79 for men. So people say, well, what if I die tomorrow? Well, what if you don't? Because statistically speaking, you're not going to die tomorrow. So you've got to plan for your future and design your future in advance. And people also say it's about the journey, not the destination. But the destination you choose in advance dictates the journey. And so when you were 16 and had to figure it out, you obviously designed your future and worked really hard toward it. And I think that a lot of times...
And also didn't know what I was doing. I literally have dropped into so many situations. I didn't have it all figured out.
Well, that's the duality.
I think it's one of those challenging things because, like you, fortunately, I also lost my father in a car accident. And he was the most fit person who... Like, he would talk about the future and being 80 and 90, and he didn't make it out of his 50s. And I think that... I agree with absolutely what
you're
saying. But
was his life worse in the present because of the future he was working toward? Or
no,
better?
No, I don't
think
that it's worse or better. So as I've said, and my audience is going to hear this again, I think of everything as a different point on a circular spectrum.
Nice.
I just genuinely don't believe in right or wrong unless and I always have my factor,
do you believe
which
in
is
optimal?
Hurting children.
Do you believe in optimal? The optimal stopping problem?
I do believe that you can optimize, but I also just truly believe that everyone is on their own journey.
Of course.
And me like projecting as to what would make something more optimal for you, what I've seen, because I'm a monetization strategist. Mm-hmm. I can see what someone is doing and instantly see how they can make more money from it. Like, that is just how my brain works. Mm-hmm. Money. Like, I'm really good at making it and seeing how other people can make it. And what I've learned is that just because, like, a lot of people don't optimize for
100%.
Money, which I don't understand it, but that's not what would make them happy. And I've had to... And this is a great conversation because it's making me see like my conversations with my husband, for example, where I'm like, you're a Grammy voting member and you've owned your business for 15 years and you can do this business tomorrow and make a ton of money. And he's like, it's not my passion, babe. And I'm like,
yeah, 100%.
What? How is it
the
not
principle,
your passion?
The principle of optimization is based on a future goal. And if you don't have any goals in the future or any vision, you, by definition, cannot mathematically optimize for it. And so I think that if you don't think about your future at all, you're in trouble. But if you only ever fixate on it, you're also in trouble. I think it's a duality. A duality is holding two seemingly opposing ideas in your consciousness simultaneously. And I think that's what we're both doing in this conversation, which I think is powerful.
Oh, yeah. Cognitive dissonance runs wild.
Yeah. So it's good. I'm so grateful to have been here. I really appreciate it. And hopefully the listeners got something really good out of the sort of duality that we held.
Yeah. And how can our listeners find you? Where would you like them to check out whatever it is that you're doing?
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. So if anyone is out there and does want to learn more, Next Level University is the name of our podcast. NextLevelUniverse.com is the website. My name's Alan Lazarus. Like you had mentioned, ChatGPT, Google, whatever, you can look us up. What I would say is that anyone who is not trying to reach their full potential and has work ethic, I'm probably not the right coach for you. I have my absolutely people, my absolutely not people. I'll give them to you quickly. So my absolutely people have high humility, high work ethic, and they have a sincere interest to reach their full potential in health, wealth, and love. And people, my absolutely not people, are anyone who wants big rewards for minimal effort. Now, that said, I do believe in leverage. I do believe in leverage. I understand Pareto's principle. I understand how to get a lot out of a little. But at the end of the day, I think if you don't have work ethic, you and I are going to not work out well. And we're just going to butt heads. I don't want to waste anyone's time. And I don't want my time to be wasted either. So thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And if you ever need anything, just reach out.
Thank you so much for joining, Alan. I appreciate you coming and talking to the listeners. And this was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.